At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's Let's ride.
For the words that are recited before each and every game here at Dodger Stadium, take it away, Finn.
It's time for Dodger baseball.
And here we are. Thank you guys for listening and tuning in to another episode of the Incline Dodgers podcast. We are presented by Tick Pick and FanSided. More a Tick Pick later. This is Kevin Klein speaking. Your Los Angeles Dodgers are now 83-55 in the year 2024. They take an 11-6 victory over the Arizona Diamondbacks this Labor Day afternoon. And they take not only this series when they won three games of the four, they officially take the season series. And technically, they're up six games in the NL West now on Arizona. But because they hold the tiebreaker, it's more realistically a seven lead game. Your Los Angeles Dodgers were on fire today. So we'll talk about this game, the previous games, just the frenzy. Every Dodger stepped up, in my opinion, in this series. And I can't wait to highlight and showcase everyone. I'm joined by Zach Sloan today, who's making his return to the Incline Dodgers podcast. This will be a more fun episode for Zach because I believe the last time he came on, it was just a lot of Ipe talk. So, Zach, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself? I'm very excited to not talk about gambling and Shohei and Ipe. Yes.
It'll be a good time. So make sure to smash that like button if you haven't yet. We got a lot of people in here, so we'll get to your questions later. Feel free to drop any comments you have in the chat. But your Dodgers, they were on fire this series. They scored a whopping, wrote it down somewhere. Looks like they scored 31 runs, and the Arizona Diamondbacks scored like 37 runs. So even though the Dodgers were outscored in this series, there was one outlier game, which is kind of why the D-backs took the lead in the run scored. But for the most part, the Dodgers were dominant in this series. More often than not, they were leading in these four games, and that's why they were able to take 3 of 4 against the Arizona Diamondbacks. I want to start with Shohei Ohtani because why not? Shohei is chasing history, folks. If you haven't even been following him, then what are you doing? I'm sure we're all aware of what Ohtani's been up to. National League front runner for the MVP award. I think everyone's going to agree with that, especially Dodgers fans. He was able to swipe 3 more bases today. So he's up to 46 stolen bases. And Shohei was like, why the hell not? He stole second base, then he stole third base because that is what Ohtani can do. So the only player in MLB history now to have 44 home runs and 46 stolen bases in one season. The guy has just been incredible this season, batting .293 with a .378 on base, .996 OPS, 44 home runs, 46 stolen bases, 98 RBIs. Let's start with Shohei Ohtani, Zach.
He is not human. Every time I talk to him, to other people, I just have to call him a unicorn. The dude just... The thing that blows me away about Ohtani is more the stolen bases. It's like he came into the offseason and you could see like in all the pregame prep and spring training, he was doing a lot of like running and like resistance band work. And this is why, like he had his mindset on becoming a great base runner and he doesn't even get close to getting thrown out half the time. Like he just, he runs and guys throw down and even good catchers, it's just not even close. He's a joy to watch. He steals bases. Like today, he stole second. He stole third. He wasn't even gassed when he got to third. Like most guys get a little bit of, you know, chest puffing from being out of breath. And he's just he's in such good shape. I hope he can continue to stay healthy and keep doing this through October because it is fun to watch.
Shohei Ohtani has just been unreal. I don't think anyone could have predicted, unless you're Jose Mota, who came on this podcast preseason and highlighted how great of a base runner Shohei Ohtani is. And I can't remember the figure he threw out there, but he did mention something crazy like Shohei Ohtani could steal X amount of bases and hit X amount of home runs if he really wanted to. And it looks like that's exactly what Ohtani has achieved. So because we're not getting the pitching from Ohtani this season as he's recovering from a second elbow surgery. So let's just highlight that. First of all, this guy has these monster numbers and he's recovering from the elbow surgery. And throughout the year, he's been able to work light throwing and bullpen sessions. I think he kind of caps himself off around 10 pitches, but he's doing that once or twice a week throwing. But with the bat, he's got all the power. He's the best hitter in baseball. He's got the most home runs up there in RBIs. He could chase a triple crown. He's really close in that mark. He's only second behind Elly De La Cruz for National League stolen bases and all of stolen bases in baseball in general. And here he is looking very likely. I didn't think we would be talking about this, but 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases is within reach. And this is crazy.
Yeah, it's a big, big number for both of those, to be able to do both of those. Even 45-45, I think, would be really awesome. I mean, I know it's not a round number, but I think that's a foregone conclusion at this point that he gets to 45-45. Because I can't imagine he goes another, how many games do we have left? 25 or ish?
Yeah, something like that, 25.
I can't imagine he goes that long without hitting at least one home run. I mean, he has, excuse me, swings that he hits that are home runs. Like the other game a couple days ago. So he's just fun, man.
And what I like about Ohtani is even when he fouls pitches off, he'll like kind of make like that hesitation or like kind of warn people with his hand, like kind of like excuse me, because
I think it's like a Japanese culture thing, if I had to guess, where he's like apologizing that he like almost killed somebody or
exactly.
Something. Like, my bad.
He just harnesses this power where he can hit the ball so hard off his bat more often than not, or I should say more often of any of the Dodgers, 100 mile plus exit velocity, so many singles, foul balls that are coming off his bat at 100 miles per hour. And it turns into a lot of home runs. We'll get into I can't remember if it was the first game or the second game. We'll go into right now. Why not? So I remember there was one game where Shohei Ohtani hit a home run to dead center, if I'm not mistaken. And I feel like I can't remember which game that was, but I swear this happened. But anyways, where I was getting at is there was the game where against Merrill Kelly, Shohei Ohtani homers to lead off the game. Mookie Betts follows up with a home run of his own. And then after that, Freddie Freeman connects for a third home run for the Dodgers, the first time all season that the Dodgers had Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman homer consecutively. And for me personally, of any regular season game of my lifetime, that was the most electric first inning I've ever seen from the Dodgers. That was just insane.
It was really fun. It was really fun. I'm just glad that they managed to win that game, because it would have put a little bit of a damper on the whole thing if they somehow blew that game. But yeah, man. I mean, Mookie has not looked great either. So getting him to have a few good swings in this series was really nice to see. He got the home run, obviously, and then the big double later in the game today. And it was good to see. I like to see all these guys coming around and getting hot when they need to be, because it's kind of been the opposite a lot of years for us, where it feels like guys are hot into September and October. And then they trail right before we get in the playoffs. They start to hit cold streaks and stuff. So it's like having Ohtani hitting good, having Freeman take that break and coming back and hitting good, having Betts getting 2 months off because of the broken hand and then coming back and him being good. It's like, it's really nice to like see them healthy and performing this time of year, because I feel like a lot of times they're all just gassed and they're tired. And I really like to see that. It has a different vibe this year.
Yeah, I really hope this is the Dodgers offense that we can see in October, because this is absolutely the potential. And I feel like there's many Septembers now where the Dodgers kind of are sleepy in the month of September going into the postseason, and we're only two games into the month of September, but so far they look very locked in. It seems like this is a different Dodgers team than the last couple of seasons. A lot of them just feel like they have something really to play for, and they're hungry and they want to win. And every Dodger, I feel like, had a contribution in this series offensively. I mean, at the four games as a whole, they had 52 hits. So if we do the math, they were averaging 13 hits a game. And that was obviously translating into a lot of runs. And we talked about Ohtani. He was a fiend on the base path. He stole four bases, throwing a couple home runs as well. Freddie Freeman was an absolute monster in this series. He homered four times, including two times today. He got a two-run home run in the first inning off Equit, who is officially known as Eduardo Rodriguez. But I was so glad to see the Dodgers just kind of pummel Equit. It felt so good. If you don't remember, this is the guy that vetoed a trade to come over to the Los Angeles Dodgers at the deadline last season because he claimed that moving from Detroit, Michigan to Los Angeles was going to take too much of a toll on his current family situation because they were based on the East Coast. But excuse me.
That was a total money grab, dude. Total money grab. He wanted the Dodgers to extend him, and the Dodgers were like, nah. And he said, no thanks.
Exactly.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah, no, I agree. So they got absolute payback on him. They made him work. He only was able to pitch four innings. Hadn't given up a hit or a home run to a lefty all season. And Ohtani and Freddie Freeman made sure to change that stat. So Freddie Freeman was on fire. So I was worried about his finger last week. I said that of all the Dodgers, if any of the current guys that were currently injured, so the Glasnows, the Yamamotos, and the Freemans, the guy that they need healthy of all those guys is Freddie Freeman. And I think he proved that point in this series. So he took some time off, and that was like a mental reset. And apparently it's done him very well because he was on fire in this series, the four home runs that I just mentioned. And he is quietly having a very strong season, despite the injury to his finger. And of course, him having to take some time off to tend to his son, Max, who's dealing with the serious illness. He's still able to put together so far a .288 batting average, .383 on base, .881 total OPS, 21 home runs, and 83 RBIs. So another great season for Freddie Freeman. And I think this is a guy that wants to really bounce back from a very disappointing postseason last year. And his swing has looked really good.
Yeah, I agree. Today's at bat, his last at bat today, he was just battling. Like, the pitcher just kept throwing pitches on the corner, up and away, up and in, down and away, down and in. He was just fouling them all off. And it was just, from a baseball standpoint, he's just, when he's on like that, he is so fun to watch. And that's the Freddie Freeman that I remember in, was it the 2021 playoffs, where he just killed us. I don't, maybe it was 19. I don't remember. When he was still with the Braves, and he just destroyed us in that postseason. It didn't matter where we pitched it. He managed to get hits. And it feels like that's where he's at physically right now, where you have to come in the zone to get him out. And then the pitcher came in the zone and he took it, you know, 430 Ted Center. It was really fun to watch.
We got BC, we got Aaron Etik in the chat saying World Series or bust. Absolutely. That's what we're here to play for. This Dodgers team, they have to win the World Series. I think that's where I stand as well. No first round exits, please. We got to win the World Series, especially with this sensational core at the top, the trio of Mookie Betts, who also had a great series and has quietly been just a phenom and a great clutch player with runners in scoring position. He's hitting basically .360 all season with runners in scoring position. And even though he missed significant time with the hand injury, he's looked like he's been able to really regain his form, especially in these crucial games. And on the year, he's hitting .301 with a .393 on base, 14 home runs, 58 RBIs. So Mookie Betts has been a big contributor as well. And if the Dodgers have all three of those guys at the top going, then there's no stopping them because they really are the cog that drives this engine. And when all three of Ohtani, Freeman, and Betts are clicking, the Dodgers are going to score a boatload of runs. And then it sets the table up for the guys like Will Smith, who who was really struggling coming into this series, but he is a D-back slayer. He had a monumental three-run home run in the first game in the series that gave the Dodgers a nice cushion. They were only up one, and then I believe that extended them up four runs, and that was actually crucial because Bonda later in the game gave up four runs in the ninth inning. More on that whole game probably later on, but Will Smith was able to get some hits as well today, drove in some runs. So Will Smith had a good series. We didn't see Muncy today because the lefty with E-Rod situation, but Muncy had a nice series. Gavin Lux had some base hits. Chris Taylor was able to actually do some damage in this series as well. That was good to see. Tommy Edmond has been awesome for the Dodgers. He's been a spark plug. He had a big clutch two-run base hit in the second game, I believe, when it was a 6-6 tie, and he made it 8-6. So Tommy Edmond has been nice. So everyone's getting the Dodger. Everyone's getting it done for the Dodgers.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not gonna lie. I still have my concerns about Will Smith. I feel like he's still chasing a lot. I think he's still searching for it. I think he's closer after this series than he was before this series. But Will Smith, like when he's at his best, he is spitting on pitches that are borderline, that are on the edges. And right now, I feel like he's swinging at stuff all around the outside of the zone, and he's not making pitchers come in the zone. And so I feel like he's not barreling up or getting as many balls to barrel because of that. So, but that I think comes with confidence too. And it's like, that's what you're seeing. Just to flip the coin and talk about somebody else you mentioned is Chris Taylor. Since he's come back, like it took him a couple of games to kind of get into it, but even when he's not getting hits, he's giving like good, like as Doc always says, good professional at bats. He's taking a lot of pitches. He's fouling off a lot more pitches. He's not swinging through balls. When he's hitting balls, he's hitting them well, even if he hits them at somebody. I've been very, very impressed with Chris Taylor since he's come back. I wouldn't have any issues if this is how he keeps playing, having him and Lux kind of be like a strict platoon at second base going forward, because I think he's been doing a great job defensively and offensively since he's come back.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Taylor, over his last seven games, looks like he's hitting .294. So yeah. Considering he was hitting, I believe, under 100 for a good 2 months, you'll take that. And Obviously, the Dodgers are going to give Chris Taylor as long of a leash as possible. They want him to make this postseason roster. Kind of feels like it might be down between Taylor and Andy Páez for the final playoff spot. And if I had to guess, they'll probably give it to Chris Taylor because of his versatility. And he can play second base. He played some good defense at the second base position today. They can move him to third if they need to, or the outfield, of course. And he's a veteran. So it's just going to come down to Chris Taylor continuing to put up good quality at bats. And for Páez, it's just the unfortunate you're a rookie, and I don't want to see him play defense in center field because it's a circus out there.
Yeah. I don't think that Páez has a place unless somebody gets injured, in my opinion. I think that was pretty clear when they sent him down. Like, if Chris Taylor continued to hit like just complete trash, sure, I think he has a chance. But with Taylor doing well and playing good defense and putting up good at bats, I think it's Chris Taylor's to lose. And unless he falls off the table and becomes Chris Taylor from the first 2 months of the season, I don't think Páez has a chance, in my opinion.
Yeah. And if there were Dodgers fans who needed a reminder, this is why they kept Chris Taylor over Jason Hayward. So I think the Dodgers are making the right call, because where would Hayward play right now? He wouldn't play. That's the answer.
No.
So Jack Flaherty, how about that guy? He was awesome today.
Pretty good.
Of all the starters in the series, Jack Flaherty was the one that shined the brightest. He went 5 2/3 innings. He had 7 strikeouts, was only charged with 1 earned run. He was great. This guy just continues to be a force out there. And I would say kind of in his last couple of starts, he did show some vulnerability when he was giving up home runs, but he looked really good today. And the one thing that I love about Jack Flaherty is his swing and miss stuff. That curveball is nasty. He's able to locate that fastball all over the plate, get it for strikes, get a lot of whiffs. So I feel really good about the deadline acquisition. I'm really glad that the Dodgers were able to pull this one off, because Flaherty has been huge. And I don't know where this rotation would be, or this team would be, to be honest, without Jack Flaherty. He's been a savior.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, I agree. Today was one of his most enjoyable starts for me to watch. I feel like he had his best command of his fastball today. I feel like sometimes when he gets knocked around or he gives up home runs, because that's really his only snag, right, so far, is when he gives up runs, it's from the dingers. But
yeah,
it's almost always like a poorly located fastball that he gives up home runs on. And today he really didn't have many poorly located fastballs. There was a few, but like the guys didn't even swing or they fouled it off, so he got away with them. But overall, I think his command today was much better. And I've wanted him on our team for a while. I wanted the Dodgers to sign him in the offseason, but we went with what's his name, the lefty that went to Boston and then got hurt.
Paxton.
Yeah, they went with Paxton instead. But you know, he's here now. I'm happy about that. I'm excited for what he's going to be able to do in the postseason too, because I think, like you said, the swing and miss stuff is what we need more of in October.
Yes. So Flaherty was good. There was one guy that was not good. One guy that really stunk in this series. And unfortunately it was Justin Robleski. I mean, the amount of ass that I saw from him yesterday, like, there was probably more ass from Robleski than you'd see at a strip club, because my goodness, he was terrible. Like, the guy got shelled. This was the worst Dodgers starter performance that I can honestly, frankly recall. Maybe Grove was worse last year, because I think Michael Grove may have given up 10 runs or something crazy in one of his starts. And Syndergaard had some bad stinkers as well. But I mean, poor Robleski got lit up like a Christmas tree. This was giving season. He was like Oprah out there. You get a run, you get a run, you get a run. His stuff was bad. He wasn't fooling anyone. He got hit hard. And unfortunately for him, he had to wear it as well, because the bullpen had been taxed and overworked because of the Kershaw mess. So Robleski went out there, I think he threw 5 pitches at the end of the day. You knew that the game was over after the third inning. Roberts had pulled most of the starters at that point as well. And it was ugly. The Dodgers lost like 14-3 or something. So I'm calling my shot right now. Robleski will not be on the postseason roster. And effective immediately, I think his season as a major leaguer in 2024 is over.
I don't know that I'm 100% on board with that. I think that Robleski still has good stuff. And I think his season as a starter is probably over, because I think at this point they'd rather go to Knack, because at least he's more of a known commodity. You know, he's not going to have these kinds of blowups. But I would be really interested to see what Robleski could do in one inning stints, and just be like, all right, dude, no more starting this year. Let's see what you can do. But furthermore, just to wear that game and go, what did he go, 5 or 6? He went 5 innings, I think. But to get through that and do that for the team when it would basically just destroy his season from a statistical standpoint, that was money for us. That was really big. You know, games like that happen sometimes as a baseball player, and for him to take it on the chin and grit through it and get through it when he didn't have good stuff, that was good to see too, for what it's worth. But let's see him in one inning stints. I wouldn't be surprised if the Dodgers try it. It's not like we don't have the need for another power lefty in the bullpen.
Well, you mentioned Knack, and I think honestly he deserves to be the 28th man on the roster. So I'm expecting them to send down Michael Peterson in a day or two when it's Knack's turn to go in the rotation. And honestly, I think he'll be in the rotation for the Dodgers for possibly the rest of the season. And if they have to bump a guy out, then maybe Knack gets moved to the bullpen and can provide some length out of the pen. Because, I mean, you compare the stats, and it's night and day. Landon Knack's been having a much better season than Robleski, and they don't owe either of them priority over the other. So Robleski got his turn first. He literally blew it. He was terrible. So now I think you got to do the service to Knack and give him an opportunity, because when he's been up with the Dodgers, from what I remember, he's been consistent and good every time out. And
yeah,
I'm honestly a little surprised we didn't get more out of Landon Knack this season, because he's been pretty good and they didn't trade him at the deadline. So it's not like they had to protect his value. So he's pitching down in Oklahoma City. So why not get him some innings up at the big league level?
At this point, I believe he has only one more option left. So if he is on the team again and he's put on the 28 man roster, he's got to stay up for the rest of the year. He's got to stay on it until the end of the year. So if that's the case, I think it's like what you said. I think he'll stay on it until the end of the year, even if it means he gets bumped to the bullpen and they get rid of a Honeywell or a Peterson or those types of relievers to keep Knack on there, because Knack has way more value than either of those two guys I just mentioned. So, but, you know, I don't think Robleski was ever making our playoff rotation unless everything went wrong.
Totally.
If he makes our playoff rotation, we've got bigger problems. So,
absolutely. And yeah, I think what you said makes sense, that the having no options is obviously a wrinkle in the plan. But I think the Dodgers at this point, with just 4 weeks left or so, they can make it work and find a role for Landon Knack. So overall, with the pitching minus Robleski, I was pretty impressed, other than game one, which I'm going to talk about now. But before I do that, make sure you hit that like button. We appreciate it. And if you're not subscribed to the Incline Dodgers, hit that subscribe button. So game one was crazy. So I had a bad feeling about Clayton Kershaw even before the game started. I still think about the NLDS start against the Diamondbacks, where they absolutely destroyed him, albeit he was injured, but that was still on the back of my mind. His last outing against Tampa Bay, he wasn't looking too good either. I noticed the stats that opponents were hitting over 400 against his fastball even before the Arizona Diamondbacks series. So that alarmed me, especially because the Diamondbacks are a really good hitting team. And this was probably worst case scenario for the Dodgers. Clayton Kershaw left the game hurt. He had a big toe injury, which I guess is better than an arm injury, because when he had initially exited the game, it was like, oh shit, please tell me he didn't hurt his arm. But this was a first for me. He had to leave with a toe injury. I can't remember any Dodgers star ever leaving the mound with a toe injury, but there's a first time for everything, I guess. So Kershaw left, he couldn't push off the mound, and that was part of the reason why he was already getting hit hard by the Diamondbacks. His fastball velocity had dropped to like 87 miles per hour. So this was just setting up for a disaster anyways. And so they took him out after an inning, basically. And the bullpen had to work 8 innings. They left Joe Kelly out there to die as well. He ended up on the IL after the game. In addition to Kershaw, Kelly threw like 46 pitches or something, which was like the most he had thrown since he had been since he was last a starter, which was like 2016 or 2017 or something that far back. But they made Kelly wear it, and then they were able to piece their way through to barely eke it out, 10-9. It was 10-5. Bonda was running on fumes at that point because he had pitched the previous two games in a row. So on the third night in a row for Banda. He got hit hard, gave up a couple home runs, but overall they survived it. But I wanted to get your thoughts on what's next with Kershaw.
I love Kershaw. He's my guy. I've been watching him forever. I still remember listening to Vinny calling his games when he was young. And I hate even uttering this to the into the ether, but he just hasn't looked great this year. He's had a couple of games where he looked solid, but it's just, you know, when you throw, when your fastball tops out at 90, it's tough to be a big leaguer. You got to have elite command, and he hasn't really had that this year. You know, if he had like a good changeup or something to get guys off of his fastball just a little bit more, I think that he would be better. I think it's probably a blessing in disguise for the Dodgers and for Kershaw for him to be injured. I don't know how long term of an injury it is, but you know, it would have been a tough call to leave him off the postseason roster. I think it makes it a little bit easier now, and then they can kind of reassess next year. I think he has a player option. But, you know, even when Kershaw was throwing 95, he didn't have, like, an elite fastball, like, movement-wise. It was always straight, and he had good command, so he could put it where he wanted and play his other pitches off of that. And when he doesn't have even 92 or 93 in the tank, it's tough against major leaguers, man. They're just too good nowadays. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say he needs to hang it up, but does he? I don't know. Is that my hot take?
I'm going to go back with my original take when I first saw Kershaw return to the Dodgers this season. And maybe in 2025, he can get it back together and he can return to form. But for the rest of this season, give him a start or two if he's able to make it back. But I think you got to keep him off the postseason roster, especially as a starter. I just don't see it. Like, I'm watching it with my eyes. Remove the name off the back of the jersey and just pretend it's some left-handed starter not named Kershaw. What I'm seeing out there is more like Jamie Moyer than Clayton Kershaw, if I'm giving the honest truth. It's not anyone's fault. It's just the reality of the situation. If the Dodgers are going to rely on Clayton Kershaw to start big games for them in the postseason, then something horrible is going to go wrong. And you can't rely on a guy that's not generating any whiffs. With the fastball and the slider, they've been hit pretty hard this season. His curveball has been his best pitch, but he doesn't throw it that often because it's probably taxing on the arm. So, unfortunately for Kershaw, I hate to say this on September 2nd, but unless they're going to have him in the bullpen as an emergency arm and pay their respects, I think you got to just leave him off the playoff roster maybe altogether.
I don't know. I mean, I think I don't disagree with you. I think that there are better guys on this 28-man, 26-man roster. I guess if we're talking playoffs, it's 26. But I think there's better options than Kershaw right now. And yes. I don't like saying it, but I mean, even a guy like Landon Knack, I think I have more faith in being like that bulk inning guy or somebody who can give you two or three innings if we get a big lead or we go down big and you just need someone to cover some innings. I have more faith that he will keep the game where it's at than Kershaw will keep, especially against like the playoff teams that we may be facing, like the offenses that we may be facing. You know, you got like the Phillies or the Diamondbacks or the Padres or the Braves. Like those are offenses that would scare the crap out of me if Kershaw was on the mound right now, just the way he's been growing. And I feel like Knack, at least with his mix of pitches, he may give up some runs, but like I don't think he'll blow up. And I think Kershaw has more potential for that. And I guess that's where my brain is going, is like blow up potential. That's my thought. That's the difference for me.
I wanna make sure to get to your guys' questions. So this is a good time to start dropping questions in the chat for us. We'll answer anything you throw our way. If you got super chats, that'd be awesome as well. So take your time, think of some questions. We'll get to those. They're not even a part of the program, but I want to just quickly shout out Travis Matthew, who sent me some nice shirts, including this Dodger long sleeve polo like shirt. It's so comfy. I think they're having a Labor Day sale going on as well. So check out their site, Travis Matthew. They got Dodgers merch. Loving what I'm wearing right now. It's breathable. It feels great. And we're winning. We're winning games here. So we talked about Kershaw. Now let's talk about Joe Kelly. He was placed on the IL, like I mentioned, with shoulder inflammation. Could be a phantom mile stint. Could be real because he missed like 60 games or something earlier this season with the same injury. Another guy that I'm going to bury him as well. I don't think Joe Kelly should be on this Dodgers postseason roster either. I just haven't liked what I've seen from him all season long. And I know that there's times where he can dial it up to 101, 102 miles per hour, but he's just been so inconsistent with the ERA over five, the high whip, giving up big home runs in crucial situations. And with my Dodgers trust tree of guys that I feel belong on the postseason roster, Joe Kelly doesn't fit.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there have been years in the past where he's pitched like this early in the season, and we've had time to like let him figure it out. And then he kind of turns it around and he'll go on a run for a couple of months of being pretty reliable, albeit still wild. But we have a deeper bullpen than we had those years, I feel like. I think that we have plenty of time, or not plenty of time this year for him to work it out and figure it out. And at this point, I'd rather let the dudes that we know are going to be dudes for us do their thing and get their reps rather than Kelly. But, you know, Kelly could be a potential, 40-man roster spot guy too, because he's not signed after this year. So if we need his roster spot to bring up someone else to get a look or something, like I think you were talking about rushing, which I think isn't going to happen at this point, but you could bring him up technically and put him on the 40-man and kick Joe Kelly to the curb, just as a thought. You know, it's...
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I'm going to be excited to continue to watch Bobby Miller pitch, hopefully, for the Dodgers at the big league level, because I think this is a guy that a lot of people ruled dead, and rightfully so. He had a terrible season, but he's starting to turn it around, and he's got like maybe four or five opportunities where he can really showcase himself and be that long guy out of the bullpen, because they're going to need at least one, if not two. And Honeywell just hasn't been doing it for me. Michael Grove has been mid-city all season long and hasn't been effective since being recalled either and coming off the IL. Michael Peterson's a hard no. He just hasn't been good. Walker Buehler's the other one. So maybe it's a battle of Walker Buehler versus Bobby Miller down the stretch in September. So we'll see. But we do have a question coming from MWG, who is a regular in the Discord. Are you benching Muncy and Lux in the playoffs against lefties?
Muncy, no. Lux, yes. But with the caveat that when that starter comes out and the bullpen starts coming in, I would bring Lux back in, more than likely. But Muncy, I would let him get his reps. I feel like he's missed so much time that they're giving him his days off against lefties. We don't have great options at third base. I mean, Kike's not really it for me. I think he's a bench guy. I don't think he should be making postseason starts. I'm, like I said earlier in the show, I'm okay with Chris Taylor if he keeps on playing the way he's playing, getting starts at second base. So kind of lines up with that question there. What about you?
I agree about Lux. I would probably have Kike against the left-handed starter over Lux just because of Kike's big game ability, big game hit ability. And then I don't know about Max Muncy yet. He has been bad against lefties all season long, but it is a small sample size. And it would be kind of painful to not have Max Muncy in your lineup, even if he can't hit lefties. He just has a good eye and can work the count when he's really feeling himself. Vintage Max Muncy. But then I guess, the other alternative would have to be Chris Taylor. But I think this brings up a good point of probably why the Dodgers wouldn't want the Atlanta Braves in an NLDS best of five format, because most likely they would throw depending on their rest and all that, because they're going to have to play the wild card round, they could potentially throw Chris Sale at us in game one and Max Fried at us in game two, both lefties. And so just by that, then they're neutralizing two of our best bats and best bats all together right there with Muncy and Lux, the way he's been swinging. So it's going to be a very interesting thing that's going on here. We've got Arizona, who we just faced, obviously. San Diego, who's beating us most of the time this season. And then Atlanta, who I think the Dodgers have one more series against them later on this month.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AskMe People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Yeah, that's a good call about Atlanta's lefty starters, but Atlanta's also still, at least out of the playoff structure is now, they still have to get past, what, the Brewers and Phillies, which they haven't done such a good job of the last couple of years. But, you know, they also didn't have Chris Sale last time. And Chris Sale, man, that dude has just been vintage this year. Just like he never got hurt for the last 2-3 years. So he scares me for sure in the postseason, because I could see him striking out like 13 Dodgers in 6 innings or something crazy when he's on with his breaking stuff.
I'm Hero. I wish that we did trade for Chris Sale instead of James Paxton. I mean, in hindsight, I'm sure we all wish we did. I'm sure we all wished we did.
I wish we got, what's his name? Flaherty instead of Paxton. So same thing, really.
Yeah. So I don't have many other takeaways on this series other than the first game was a shit show, but the Dodgers survived. The offense was huge. They scored 10 runs. Most nights the Dodgers would lose when they give up 9 runs, of course. But thankfully the offense really carried and bailed out the pitching staff, and I think kind of covered up some of Dave Roberts' interesting in-game management decisions, like pitching Michael Kopech in the 6th inning and then having Anthony Bonda close it out in the 9th on 3rd consecutive pitching day in a row. But we survived. We got 10 runs. The second game was a back and forth between the 3-0 Dodgers lead, where we hit the 3 consecutive home runs and there was electricity all over the ballpark. And then somehow we gave up the lead in the bottom of the first inning because Corbin Carroll hit like a inside the park home run, and then the D-backs rallied. But we got the job done. We won that game. Tommy Edman was clutch. And then we talked about the third game being a shit show, and then today, which was just Dodgers dominance. So took 3 of 4. I was hoping for a 2-2 split. I was being generous. So Dodgers exceeded my expectations. This is the best they've looked all season. In my opinion, the offense was just clicking and firing on all cylinders. So let's get to this question, because I actually wanted to talk about this next as well from Ivy. Is Shohei Ohtani going to get booed at Anaheim in his first at bat? Because the Dodgers go to the Anaheim Angels next tomorrow for a 2-game series. And this will be Shohei Ohtani's first game not in an Angels uniform.
Sort of. We played there in the freeway series in the beginning of the series, season, preseason or whatever. So I don't think so. I think most Angels fans aren't deluded enough to think that he would actually have wanted to come back there. I think it was pretty clear for the last year that he wanted to be somewhere that was going to be a winning franchise and a place to play where he had a chance to play in the postseason. And they never gave that to him. Like, they never even sniffed the playoffs in 6 years. So for a guy that's like Shohei Ohtani's like idea of everything being great is being in the playoffs, winning the World Series, being the last guy standing, and he never got that opportunity with them. So like I would be shocked if the fans booed him. I really do. I think that they'll cheer him. I think that it'll get muted as the series goes along, especially if he gets a bunch of home runs against them. But I think they'll not be stupid.
I unfortunately think there are a lot of stupid Angels fans out there, and they drink from the water that Artie Moreno has tainted. And so I'm kind of expecting some mixed reactions. I think the diehards, they'll get on their feet and applaud him. But I think there's going to be a lot of more casual fair weather fans or the Angels fans that have kind of teetered off as the years have gone by with Artie Moreno ruining that franchise. And so I do expect some boo birds. But I do think that overall, Ohtani will get more applause. And I do expect the Angels to be classy enough to have some type of epic tribute video for Shohei Ohtani. And if they don't, then Artie Moreno needs to be banned from baseball. That would have to be like the final straw to just eject him and send him back to wherever he came from, because that would be an absolute disgrace if they don't do something nice for Ohtani after all he's done for that franchise. Because like you were saying, it's not his fault they never made the playoffs. He was an MVP twice for them and did everything he could to try to produce a winning product. But this is officially the first time in Shohei Ohtani's big league career where he's on a team that has a winning record, because all the Angels teams that he was on never finished above 500.
So. Yeah, which is still just so crazy. Like, you think about how important it is for baseball teams to have rounded rosters when you can have Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout on their team for 6 years and you can't even be a 500 baseball team. It's crazy.
Yeah, so I'm with Royo Estrada, and I think this is a good shot to call. Lock it in. Shohei Ohtani will hit his 45th home run at Angel Stadium. I would be absolutely shocked if he doesn't get the home run. Unless they pitch around him, he's going to get that 45th home run. And I think that baseball is going to be quite valuable for some reason, because it'd be the 45 home run to go with the 45-plus stolen bases now. So if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, this is actually a great time to shout out our partnership with TickPick. You can download the TickPick app right now because there's no service fees ever at checkout. And oftentimes when I compare prices to TickPick, to the Ticketmasters and the StubHubs and the SeatGeeks, TickPick comes out cheaper. So download the TickPick app. And if you were even hesitating or thinking about going to the Angel Stadium to watch Shohei Ohtani play his first official games back at Angel Stadium and try to catch that 45th home run ball, well, this is your opportunity to download the app right now for TickPick. Anything else, Zach, to cover in this Angel series? And for the chat, we're going to be about 15 more minutes, so make sure to get your questions in there and hit that like button.
No, I don't think I have anything else for the Angel series. I think that I guess I do. I wanted to interject a little bit back when you were talking about Bobby Miller. Do you have any concern about his knee? Because I think that this was the first we heard about it, when he kind of like stumbled a little bit to first base, and then we found out after that it's been something that's been bothering him, and it makes me wonder how much of his struggles this year have been because of his knee, and like, is he having surgery like the day that the playoffs end, or is this like a rest and rehab kind of thing? And because I think it would make a lot of sense to his struggles if this is what he's been dealing with all year. And with that being said, like, I think I said it in the Discord earlier this week that, like, I have, after the way that Buehler's pitched his last two games, I have way more faith in Buehler regaining more of his form than I do about Bobby Miller, only because of that knee. Like, it's just such an important thing for pitchers, right? Like, I don't know if you remember, like, when Rich Hill got hurt, he hurt his knee at one point and he, like, tried to pitch through it, and he had this big-ass brace on his knee. So I have some concerns about Bobby, but I think that I'm very interested to see how he throws against the Angels. That's my big takeaway from the Angel series is like him and Bueller and seeing how they perform. And then, you know, shout out to Justin Yamas from the Discord, you know, got to see how Hollywood does. That's about it.
Well, to answer your question, I don't know where to have my concern level with Bobby Miller and the knee. This isn't the first time that the Dodgers have just randomly thrown an injury at us that a player has been dealing with all season long. This happened with Clayton Kershaw, who apparently has been dealing with the bone spurs in his big toe. And now they're using that as an excuse to shut him down because it's gotten to a point where he can't move his foot. Last season, it just slipped my mind. Last season, David Peralta apparently had been playing with an injury and they failed to disclose that. Kershaw, they claimed, wasn't hurt, and then he was actually hurt. They let Will Smith catch with broken ribs for a couple of months. I remember with Max Scherzer, he had been dealing with hamstring type of injuries, and then they randomly pulled him from a game. So to answer your question with Bobby Miller, I remember. And then Gavin Stone apparently was dealing with a foot injury last season. That's why he was kind of an ineffective pitcher last season, as well as having shaky confidence. So with Bobby Miller, I don't think it would lead to surgery. I'd be pretty surprised if he was able to pitch on a foot that needed surgery. I could see it maybe affecting his control and mechanics. Hopefully with time and him having time off on the IL stint and just being down in Oklahoma City, his foot will heal naturally. But yeah, I mean, like we were saying earlier, it's just to wait and see with Miller and how he'll look for the rest of the season, because it seems like the Dodgers are trying to give him another chance to make the postseason dance.
Yep.
So I'm not seeing any questions yet, but going to continue to urge you guys to ask questions or Dodgers comments and we'll shout you out. The other thing that I wanted to cover real quick was, do you have an idea of what the final postseason roster is going to look like? Do we think to make things simple, Gratterall is going to come back, hopefully stay healthy, so they'll have him on the postseason roster. I think for the position players, it's down to Chris Taylor and Andy Páez, because we know the other 12. And then for the pitchers, I think we just list them out real quick. It's going to be Glasnow and Yamamoto. Hopefully they're both healthy. Flaherty and Stone, I think that's your four for the rotation. So then the bullpen, you got Kopech, Phillips, Gratterall, Hudson, Trinan, Vesia, Honda. Yeah. So that's 11. And then I missed.
You can have 12, right?
You have 13.
13. So
missing two. I'm obviously blanking on someone important because I for sure.
Did you say Trinan?
Oh, Frazier. Yeah, I said Trinan.
Frazier, yeah.
Frazier's 12. And so the final spot I feel like is going to come down to Bueller. Bobby Miller, sorry. And then there's an outside shot. I guess Michael Grove could be in the mix, but it's hard for me to see. And then Kershaw's on the IL, but you can't rule him out, I guess. Joe Kelly's on the IL. You can't rule him out. But yeah, there's just a bunch of guys right now.
So I would say for those last couple of spots, I would say Bueller's probably the most likely, assuming he stays healthy. And then you also got Landon Knack, who's a possibility. But all of this is kind of assuming that Yamamoto and Glasnow get back, which, like you had mentioned earlier with this Dodgers medical staff, we don't know. Like, I think I'm more in positive territory for Yamamoto right now, only because he's made a couple of rehab starts now, and he's, like, trending back. Glasnow, I'm still, like, cautiously optimistic, but I don't know how much time he's going to need to build up. It's like we're in September now. He doesn't have time for two or three rehab starts if he isn't even throwing off of a mound yet. Like, that's my biggest concern about Glasnow. So, and that changes the postseason picture a lot, I think, if you don't have one of the two of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got a couple questions, and then we'll get to the final stretch here. From Ivy, the question gets asked a lot, but who would you rather face in the NLDS, at full health, the Arizona Diamondbacks or the San Diego Padres, which one would you have to, which one would you pick? Because looking like it's going to be that way.
That's a tough one. I think that it could go, I flip back and forth all season. Based on how this season, this series went, I'd say probably Arizona, only because their pitching isn't there. And if our pitching is at full strength, I feel like that more neutralizes their offensive capabilities. But they're both not fun teams to have to play in the postseason. They're both good teams.
No.
I just hope that Tatis comes back and ruins the clubhouse chemistry that they got going down in San Diego and they get bad again. So,
yeah, I mean, Tatis is back. First game back's today. Based off the way it's gone all season, Padres have had our number and they seem to have assembled a roster to compete and try to beat the Dodgers, while the Arizona Diamondbacks have a very potent offense and one of the best in the National League. But their pitching doesn't win me over versus the Padres pitching. And I feel like if we really are locked in, we should be able to beat the Diamondbacks. So I would go with Arizona. I'd rather face Arizona and rematch of the 2023 NLDS. And if the Padres survive and so be it, then we'll get them in the NLCS.
Yeah.
And Yongyi, what about the Braves? Would you rather face the Braves than Arizona or San Diego? For me, the Padres actually are number one. I don't want to face the Padres in a best of five. And then number two would be the Braves, and then number three would be Arizona. But that's just me.
Yeah. Are the Braves the only thing with the Braves is like they have so many position players that are out that you figure their offense is so severely hindered. I don't know enough. I don't follow the Braves closely enough to know, but I think Albies is out. I don't know if he's going to be back. I think Austin Riley is out. I don't know if he's going to be back. Like if they're missing those dudes, I might feel more comfortable facing the Braves. Outside of the two starting pitchers you mentioned earlier, like I think that Sale and Fried would be tough for us, but I think that our starting pitching is just as good or can be just as good. And I think that the rest of our team is better than theirs. So I don't know. I think I'm on board with you though, in that I think Arizona's pitching makes me more inclined to want to face them. I think our offense can do more against them. As long as our pitching shows up, I think we would have a better matchup there.
Yeah. Well, the way it's shaping up right now, this will be the third year in a row where the Dodgers get a bye, get some rest, and they have to face an NL wild card winner that will likely be coming off some momentum. So hopefully third time is the charm for the Dodgers. And they can get over this hump, or else there's going to be some serious consequences. So, Zach, I'm just going to leave it back to you. If there's anything else you wanted to cover real quick, or if anyone in the chat wanted to throw a last-second question at us, we're at the 55-minute mark. So I've covered, I think, everything I wanted to cover today. The Dodgers slaughtered the Diamondbacks. They've played some of their best baseball, and I'm a happy guy.
Likewise. I did have one question I wanted to bring up with you because it's something I've talked to my dad about a lot because you were talking about getting the rest for the wild card. I think that the wild card series needs to be tweaked so that if the wild card winner wins the first two games, the third day you play against whatever team you play against. Or if they play three games in 3 days, the fourth day, they play the NLDS starts, essentially. Because I feel like, as it stands right now, the benefit you get for winning the division is you get the days off when they're playing in the wild card. But the disadvantage to the wild card team is basically that you lose one starter, for all intents and purposes. Because if you play three games in the wild card, and then you have a day off, you could throw your normal game one starter in game two. And it's not that I just feel like it's not a big enough advantage to the team that wins the division. Like I felt like it hurt teams more to have a one game wild card because you'd see them, because it was a one game have to win, they'd throw their two best starters in the first game just to win it. And that benefits the team in the division, you know, that wins the division more. Mm-hmm. And there's not that much of a benefit anymore. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are. Like, should the MLB tweak it, or do you like it the way it is?
No, I don't like it the way it currently is. I'm trying to figure out what the postseason schedule was like last season. But
if I remember, it was the wild card. They play three games and then they have a day off to travel, and then they play again
there, the day after. You're right. Okay. So, man, I don't
like, I think that if at a minimum, they need to get rid of the day off. Like, you win game three, you get your asses on a plane and you go where you need to go. Like, I don't think that giving them a day off to like rest and recover and it hurts the divisional team more, and it helps the wild card team more, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with that. Like, if they do have a game three and game three is on 10-3, then NLDS should be on 10-4. I do think that is at a minimum what they could do. Because, yeah, I mean, the Dodgers basically get 5 or 6 days off, and that's just a lot of time off.
Yeah.
And that's like an all-star break. Yeah. So I don't like this. Like, this only works in the NFL. Other sports, it doesn't make sense, especially baseball, that's so timing and rhythm dependent. Like, and then just expanding even more to 8 would just be even more stupid. So I don't know what baseball can do to fix this mess.
I mean, the only thing that I can think of is like, you get rid of the wild card altogether and you just have, you know, the top however many number of teams in the division, and then they just play division series, so to speak. You know, maybe you don't call it a division series anymore, but you just call it, you know, round one of the playoffs, and then it's 5-game series from the get-go, and nobody has any time off. You just go right into it. You know, best team versus worst team, second best versus second worst, and you just do it like that, where there's no, where the division doesn't necessarily matter. It's just your record. Like, think about how much that would have changed the season we just, a couple years ago, where we were racing with the Giants, when we had 106 and they had 107. It wouldn't have mattered that much. Both teams wouldn't have killed each other to win the division. Would have been a bit more healthy going into the playoffs. It would have made for a better product on the field. But, you know, that's just me.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the only thing I could think of to help fight this rhythm would be expand it to 8 teams make the both leagues. So now 16 teams make the playoffs, and the 1 and 2 seeds, how you would format it, I guess, is think of it as a 2-0 lead. And if you're the wild card team as an 8 or 7 seed, you have to win 3 straight. And that would be the only way to get the top seed some games in. And at the same time, you're rewarding the 8 and 7 seed, because at least you get a chance versus missing it altogether. That's the only thing.
I kind of like that idea. I don't know that I would give them a 2-0 lead, but I would say I give them a 1-game lead. Like, the series starts like 1-0 to the team that's at the top. Yeah. So that you're putting the onus on the worst team to try to step up and make it a series by winning that first game and evening the series and stuff like that. That's a cool idea. I like that.
Yeah, it's the only thing I can really think of to fix this mess. Well, I don't think we have any more questions. We've covered all our final thoughts. Your Los Angeles Dodgers are 83-55, as a reminder. They take the season series against the Arizona Diamondbacks, and they're playing good baseball. So thank you guys for listening to this week's episode of the Incline Dodgers podcast. Might be back later in the week with Jake, and who knows who else will show up. But if you're not already subscribed on the audio feed, hit that like and subscribe button. And if you're on the YouTube page, drop some comments below as well. We appreciate you guys all watching. Everyone, hope you have a great rest of your Labor Day. And Kevin and Zach are signing off.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.